Okay, first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for the invitation. It's a great pleasure to be here. Today, I want to talk about recent joint work with Sasha Fridley and Dima on a model of inhomogeneous percolation that I will now introduce. So we work on the lattice ZD with D greater or equal to 2. And we consider the usual independent bond percolation process on the lattice with bond occupation probabilities that take two different values depending on the edges. So for all edges except on the first coordinate axis, the bond percolation probability, the bond occupation probabilities will be given by P. And along the first coordinate axis, the bond occupation probabilities will be given by P prime. This special line that I've drawn in red, so the first coordinate axis, I will call it L in the rest of my talk. So the probability measure corresponding to this model will just be denoted by P, P, P prime. And to simplify notation, when P is equal to P prime, that is when we consider the homogeneous percolation model, I will just write PP. Okay. So that's the model. It has been already studied some time ago by Tsang, by Newman and Wu. And what they were interested in was the case where the bond occupation probability in the bulk, so the P, takes the critical value PC. And what they were interested in was to determine whether increasing the value of the bond occupation probability along the line could make the model percolate even at PC. So the result was that this is not possible. At least it's not possible either in dimension 2 or in dimension sufficiently large. Okay. So our question, yes?
In high dimension, you take still a line? Or
it's a line always. It will always be a line. Actually, what they did here, they also consider higher dimensional objects, not only lines. And then the result is different. So what we are interested in is different. We are interested in the regime where the bulk percolation occupation probabilities P are strictly smaller than the critical value, so the bulk is subcritical. And of course, then there is no question that there is no percolation in any dimension when P prime, for any value of P prime smaller than 1. So the quantity we are interested in instead is the rate of exponential decay of the collectivities along the line. That is, you look at the probability under this measure PPP prime that 0 is connected to the vertex along the line that is at distance n to the right. And then this quantity, we hope, decays exponentially fast. And the rate of exponential decay is denoted by CPP prime. Okay. And that's the quantity we're interested in. So the main question that I will investigate in this talk is what is the behavior of this function psi PP prime as a function of P prime for fixed value of P smaller than PC. So why the hell are we interested in this quantity? It's because it plays a role very similar, you will see later, a role very similar to the role the free energy plays when you look at spinning problems for polymers. Okay. So the behavior, the change of behavior of this quantity is closely related to a change of behavior of the polymer, of the cluster that connects 0 to the point anyone. I will be much more precise later on. And actually, studying this kind of problem where you add defects along a line has been of interest these last few years. In particular, people were trying to do this kind of things that I will discuss today in the case of last passage percolation, but it's still too hard to do anything seriously. So this is, in a sense, the simplest non-trivial model in which you can study this kind of problem rigorously. Okay. So what can we say about this function psi pp prime? So we start with some very elementary things. First, psi pp prime exists. It exists for the usual reason that if you use FKG inequality, you can derive some subadditivity property, and then the existence of psi pp prime follows immediately. A second property that is fundamental but not easy is the fact that in the homogeneous case, so when you have p prime equal to p, we'll just denote it by psi p, this is strictly positive for all P subcritical. That's now a rather old result by Menchikov and Eisenman-Barsky. That's a deep result. And then an easy result again is that psi PP prime is a non-increasing function of P prime. That's easy because you can take the measure. You can obviously couple all these measures, p, p, p prime, for different values of p prime, put them in the same probability space in a trivial way, and that is establishes immediately the fact that this quantity is not increasing. In particular, and that's what I want to point out now, it's that if p prime is smaller than p, we already know from this that psi p p prime is larger or equal to psi p, and when p prime is larger than p, psi p p prime is smaller than psi p. So this I will come back to in a few minutes, but I would like just to discuss the first inequality here, because it looks a bit unlikely to be an inequality. Indeed, if you lower the edge, the occupation probability along the line, then and you force to have a connection between 0 and any 1, then the cluster can just simply avoid the line, and you will never feel the fact that you have lowered the occupation probabilities. And for a cluster in dimension 2 and higher 2, to avoid the line, not something that costs exponentially, that has an exponential cost. So this should not affect the value of psi pp prime, and we would expect here an equality. Indeed, that's fact number one. So psi pp prime is equal to psi p for all p prime smaller or equal p. And the proof is exactly what I said. So what you do, one way to, we want a lower bound on the probability of connecting 0 to any 1. One way to do that is just to move say a distance n to the power alpha with alpha between 1/2 and 1 vertically, say along the second coordinate axis. You get to a point u, and then you move to a point v, which is a distance n to the power alpha from any 1, and then you go back straight again to any 1. So that's one way to make the connection. And by FKG, you can, the probability of this to occur is the product of the probability of these three type of connections. The contribution of these two vertical stretches is trivial to compute. It's p to the power 2 n alpha. In particular, it's exponential of small of n, because alpha is smaller than 1, so it does not influence anything. And then we are left with the probability that u is connected to v. But now we have the connection between two points that are distance n from each other, and we have subcritical percolation process, so we know that typically such a cluster will have fluctuation of order square root of n. So if you use this ID, you can easily derive what you want. So the probability that u is connected to v under PPP prime is certainly bigger than the probability that is connected that u is connected to v, but u is not connected to the line L. So my cluster does not touch the line. Now, because the cluster does not touch the line, the probability of this event under PPP prime is the same as under PP. And since under PP, the cluster in any case does not want to make fluctuations that are larger than square root of n, this is basically the same as the probability that u is connected to v, and this by definition behaves like exponential minus psi pn. So what we have established in this is that the probability that 0 is connected to any 1 under PPP prime is bounded below by something that behaves roughly like exponential minus psi pn, which shows that psi pp prime is always smaller or equal to psi p. And as we have seen before, like in this regime, psi pp prime is also bigger than psi p. This establishes the equality. Okay, so that's the first thing. Second fact is that psi pp prime is actually a Lipschitz continuous function of p prime on the interval 0, 1. So that it's Lipschitz continuous between 0 and p is trivial because it's constant between 0 and p. So what we are really interested in is what happens between p and 1, it's equal to p. So I will take 2 points, p prime 1, p prime 2, say between p over 2, because I just want to be able to, I want my interval to contain the point p over 2 and 1. And I want to understand the effect of changing p prime on the probability of having a connection. So I'm looking at this ratio of probabilities, and this ratio of probabilities, as usual, you can rewrite that as the exponential of the log, and you get the difference of the log, and the difference of the log, write it as the integral of the derivative. Then what you get is something that is, you have to evaluate the derivative with respect to p prime of such a probability of such an event. And for this, you can use Rousseau's formula. So Rousseau's formula tells you that if you have an increasing event and you want to compute the derivative with respect to the probability of occupation of some edge or of the edges, then what you get is essentially the expectation under the measure is here with p and s because I'm integrating, so p prime is equal to s, the expectation under the measure conditional on the event, so the event is that zero is connected to any one, of the number of pivotal edges. So what is a pivotal edge? It's a classical notion of percolation. So you consider some event, say some increasing event, that is occurring. You condition the fact that it is occurring. Now you look at all the edges that are there, and you look at which edges is critical for the realization of the event A, in the sense that if I remove this edge, then I'm destroying the occurrence of the event A. Okay, there are a number of edges that have this critical property, that just by removing this edge alone, I'm already destroying the event A. That's the so-called pivotal edges, and these are crucial in the these are responsible for the derivative of the increase of the probability of the event. Okay. So we have such a formula, such an expression. Since P prime is only living on the line, we get only the pivotal edges that live on the line L. Okay, that's the only subtlety. Okay, so that's good. Now, we are looking at the probability that 2.0 and any one are connected. We are looking at the percolation process, which is subcritical. So it's pretty clear and not difficult to prove that the size of the cluster will not be much bigger than n. It has to go there. It already does not want very much to go up to anyone. Certainly will not spend much more time than necessary. So it's not very difficult to prove that the number of edges that the cluster connecting 0 and anyone will have on the line L will be, say, smaller than 2n, for example, with very high probability. Okay. Now, if you use this information, you plug it there. So of course, if the number of edges on the line of this cluster is smaller than 2n, so is the number of pivotal edges. So you plug this inside, and you estimate what remains. And what you get is that this ratio is bounded above by exponential of, say, 8 over p, p prime 2 minus p prime 1 times n. Now we take the log, divide by n, change sign. And what you get is that psi p p prime 1 minus psi p p prime 2 is smaller than 8 over p, p prime 2 minus p prime 1. It's also bigger than 0 because we have already seen that psi pp prime is decreasing in p prime. Okay, so this establishes the Lipschitz continuity of this function. So what do we know up to now? So we know that function psi pp prime is constant up to p. We also know that psi pp prime, when p prime is equal to 1, is equal to 0, but because when p prime is equal to 1, all edges on the line L are open, so the probability that 0 is connected to any 1 is 1. Okay, so there is no exponential decay. So there are two natural questions. The first one is whether psi pp prime continues to be equal to psi p a little bit after p, and then only later starts to decay. So that's the first question, or maybe it decays immediately after p. And the second question is whether psi pp prime continues to be zero close to one, or is immediately positive. So we'll start with this second question here. And the answer is that psi pp prime is always strictly positive when p prime is smaller than 1. And this is, again, not difficult to prove. What you do is you take your line L, so this is 0, any 1, and you split it into blocks of length, say, 1 over psi p, where psi p is the rate of exponential convergence along the first coordinate axis for the bulk process. So that's something that measures the typical size of connection, typical size of clusters in the bulk, okay, the correlation length of the model in the bulk. Then when you say that one of these blocks, this block dk here is covered, if I can find a point on the line on the left of the block, a point on the line on the right of the block that are connected, but only uses edges in the block, in the bulk, with no edges from the line that is used, like in this picture. Okay? Good. Now, since the size of the block is for the order of the correlation length in the bulk, the probability of covering a block is uniformly away from 1. Okay. So there is a cost to cover a block. There is a strictly positive cost to cover a block. So we deduce from that up to a probability, up to an event of exponentially small probability, a positive fraction of the blocks will be uncovered. We'll be able to find a positive fraction of these blocks here that will not be covered by such a path. Among all these blocks that are not covered, there will also be a positive fraction of them that will have zero open edges along the line. That's simply because the probability of opening zero edges is 1 minus p prime to the length of the block. So this occurs with positive probability. And this is independent for each block. So we deduce that there is also a positive fraction of uncovered blocks which have all their edges closed, again up to an event of exponentially small probability. Okay, but now this finishes the proof, because if I want, suppose that there is a block somewhere that is uncovered, say this one is uncovered, and all the edges along the line are closed, and it's impossible for me to have a connection between zero and anyone, because I cannot, when I'm getting there, I cannot use edges on the line because they are not there, and I cannot use a path outside the line because the block is not covered. Okay, so there would be no connection. So the only way to have a connection is that there are no uncovered blocks with all their edges closed, and therefore I'm on this exponentially rare event. Okay, so that proves that psi PP prime is always positive when P prime is smaller than one. Okay, so we know that this is what happens. So now we can go to the other question. So what happens close to P? So one natural way to look at what happens close to P is to define a new critical point in P prime that we call P prime C, which is the first time at which the curve starts to leave psi P. So the first time psi P prime becomes different to psi P. Okay, so it's denoted by P prime C, the sum of all the P primes such as psi P prime is equal to psi P. Okay. And the fourth fact is that P prime C in dimension 2 and dimension 3 is equal to P. That means that dimension 2 and dimension 3, if you increase if you give an arbitrarily small increase of the occupation probabilities along the line, you change the rate of exponential decay of the connectivities. While in dimension 4 and higher, P prime C is strictly between P and 1, so that if you don't give a sufficiently large reward, the connectivities are not affected, and the exponential rate of connectivities are not affected. Okay. So how do you prove that? This is a bit longer. So this question determining whether this is what occurs, so P prime C is equal to P or not, amounts to determining whether this ratio grows exponentially fast with n or not. Why is that so? It's so because in the numerator you have something that behaves like exponential of minus psi pp prime times n, and the denominator you have something that behaves like exponential of minus psi p times n. So if psi pp prime is different from psi p, that means smaller than psi p, this grows exponentially fast, and otherwise it does not. Okay, so this, knowing if this grows exponentially fast or not, tells you whether this occurs or that. Okay, and the question is for p prime very just slightly larger than p. Okay. So first observation, which allows you to deal with this problem, is that this ratio that you are interested in, you can rewrite it as follows. So what you do is that you decompose the event in the numerator here. You decompose it in terms of what is the shape of the cluster in the realization of the event. And then what you get after some algebra is that this is equal to the expectation under the homogeneous measure, which is very good because the homogeneous measure, we have a lot of information about it. We still don't have much information about the measure PPP prime, but this one we know very well. So we have the expectation under the homogeneous measure conditioned on the fact that there is a connection between 0 and any 1 of some exponential functional of the cluster containing 0 and any 1. So this exponential function is exponential of some functional function and L tilde of the cluster, or L tilde of the cluster is log P prime over P times the number of edges of the cluster that lie along the line, plus log 1 minus P prime over 1 minus P times the number of edges of the boundary of the cluster that lie on the line. So the boundary of the cluster is the set of all edges of the lattice that do not belong to the cluster, but which have at least one endpoint in the cluster. So this is formally, if you look at this expression, it looks very similar to the pinning problem for random walk, d-1 dimensional random walk. So if you look at, you consider d-1 dimensional random walk xn, the pinning problem amounts to determining the growth rate of this expression. You look at the expectation for your random walk, condition the fact that at time n, it returns to zero, of some exponential function, which is just exponential of epsilon is a positive number, times the local time at zero. So that's the classical, it's elementary pinning problem for random walk. And formally, it looks very similar. You just replace the path of the random walk here by, in a sense, by the cluster. Okay. But there is one major difference between these two expressions. And this difference is that here you have two coefficients, log p prime over p and log minus p prime over 1 minus p, that have opposite signs. So that means that the potential that the cluster feels is not purely attractive. It has both attractive and repulsive components, which is something you don't see in the effective model. Okay, it comes from the fact that in the effective model you have only the polymer, if you want, while in this model, percolation model, you have the rest of the world that is also filling the potential. Okay. Good. So how do you prove this fact? Where is it? This fact number four. So the basic tool to prove fact number four is this random walk representation for subcritical percolation cluster that was first derived by Campanino, Chase, I think in 91, then derived in a different way by Campanino and Dima must be 2003, something like that. And the version we need is the version that we did in 2008. Okay. And it tells you the following thing. So we consider a subcritical percolation process. Now it's the homogeneous process, P prime is equal to P. So consider subcritical homogeneous percolation process, fix some N which is large. The claim is that up to an event of exponentially small conditional probability, so I'm looking at the homogeneous process, condition the fact that there is a connection between zero and any one. So up to an event of exponentially negligible probability, the cluster C0 any one admits the following decomposition, like in the picture. So it can be written as a concatenation of small pieces, which we call the irreducible pieces. If irreducible pieces meet at special points that we call cone points, because okay, there are backward and forward cones starting from this point and containing the past and the future of the cluster. Okay. And once you have such a structure, you can, in a very natural way, introduce an effective random walk representation just by following the increments of the corresponding irreducible pieces. So that's what I've written here. And therefore, the event zero is connected to any one can be rewritten in a sense as the event that YL, so this first special increment, then plus Y1 plus Y2 plus and so on plus YR is equal to any one. So you have reformulated the event in terms of the random walk. The random walk Y1, Y2, YN is really just a random walk on VD with independent increments which have nice properties that I will recall in the next slide. YL and YR, they are two independent random variables that are independent from the random walk. And they have exponential tails. So we are interested in the regime when N becomes very large. These guys will be small because they have exponential tails. So basically they don't affect anything when N becomes large. Just they are nuisance when you make computation because you have to take care of them. But in this talk, I will do as if they do not exist. Okay, so I will ignore YL and YR. Okay. So what do we know about this random walk, or effective random walk Y? So let me denote for convenience, decompose YK into two parts. There will be a part which is the coordinate YK parallel, which is the coordinate along the first coordinate axis, and YK orthogonal, which is the transverse coordinate. Okay, transverse component of the increment. Then what we know is that this random walk is directed. The probability that the first component increases is strictly one. It has exponential tails. Probability that the first component is bigger. Probability that its size is bigger than t is exponentially small in t. And then it has some symmetry. The probability that the transverse component takes some value is the same as probability of taking the opposite value in particular. The transverse component has zero expectation. That's useful. Okay, so now how do we prove the claim? So I will start with the case of dimension 4 and higher, and there we want to prove that P prime C is larger than P. So what does that mean? We want to show that psi P prime is still equal to psi P when P prime is slightly larger than P. Okay. So we want to show that this does not grow exponentially fast when P prime is sufficiently close to P. So I just recall the expression I showed before. So this can be written as this expectation of this exponential functional. And I told you that what is annoying us here is that this functional has both attractive and repulsive parts. But here we are after an upper bound. So if you want an upper bound, you can just forget about the repulsive part that is annoying. And we get an upper bound by keeping this functional here, L hat, which just keeps the attractive part. So it's log P prime over P times the number of edges along the line. So let me call this factor here, epsilon, it's a strictly positive small number. Okay. So don't read the details. I want to explain rather what is written here, but you don't have to read the formula. So this is what we just said. So this ratio is bounded above by the ex- expectation of exponential epsilon times the number of edges along the line. Okay, I want to rewrite this, I mean, to get an upper bound on this quantity in terms of the effective random walks. Okay. So here is the beginning, the start of this effective random walk, the first few steps of the effective random walk. And remember that to each increment of this random walk, I have what we call these diamonds, the intersection of these forward and backward cones, like here, as diamonds. And these diamonds contain, I mean, the cluster is contained in the union of these diamonds, cluster C0 any one. Okay. So in particular, for all the diamonds that I've drawn in blue here, I know that the cluster is contained inside the diamond, so it does not contain any edges of the line, because these diamonds, these blue diamonds, I put them in blue because they do not touch the line. Okay. So in particular, for all these guys, the cluster will not contribute to the functional that is here. Okay. On the other hand, for the red diamonds, which have an intersection, which is an empty intersection with the line, it is possible for the cluster inside the diamond to use some edges. So we have to upper bound the total cost, that the total effect that it can have on this functional. And the worst thing that can happen is that it uses all the edges in the intersection. So this gives you an upper bound. But it's a bit of an annoying upper bound, because the length of this segment here, it depends in a non-trivial way on the relative position of the two endpoints. It's a mess if you want to compute things. So you can be just slightly more generous. Instead of just rewarding this, you just reward the full horizontal projection of the red diamond. Okay, that's much, much easier to make computation. And then at this stage, you're back to something that is very similar to a Pinner problem for a random walk. Okay? You have a directed random walk in dimension, say, 3 plus 1 or more, which has a reward when it gets close to the line. So in the usual problem, you get the reward exactly on the line, and that makes the problem a bit more, technically a bit more involved, but the idea is exactly the same. So here you get a reward when you get close enough to the line. And another thing that is a bit more annoying here is that the size of the steps are not constant, and the number of steps is not constant. I think it's random, so it makes the analysis more complicated, but in spirit, it's exactly the same thing as the Pinning problem for the random walk in high dimension, and this is a problem that is easy to solve. So it's well known that in transient dimensions, what you have is that if you give a too small reward for Pinning, then the random walk will just ignore the line, except at the beginning and at the end. Okay. So from this, you can very easily prove now this result by using similar ideas to what is done in the random walk case. So let's move to the more interesting case of dimension 2 and 3. Here we want to show that P prime C is equal to P. So we want to show that an arbitrarily small increase of the probabilities along the line leads to a change of the exponential decay of connectivities, exponential rate of decay of the connectivities. So we want to show that this ratio grows exponentially fast with n as soon as P prime is larger than P. So the idea is to introduce a suitable event. I will say precisely what this event and delta is in the next slide, but we want to introduce a suitable event that is a subset of the event that has a connection between 0 and any one. Then since it's a subset, I can certainly get this lower bound. And then this lower bound, I can split it into a product of two terms. The first term is the comparison of the probability, the ratio of probabilities under PPP prime and PP of the event and delta. That's what I will call the energetic gain. I will explain the terminology in a second. And then you get a second term that is the probability under the homogeneous measure that conditionally on the fact that you have a connection and delta occurs. That will be called the entropic cost. So why this terminology? The idea is that this event and delta that I will introduce in a minute is something that forces the cluster in a sense to stay along the line. Okay? It will not wander away, it will stay along the line. So if the cluster has to stay along the line, then it's probably much better for it to live under the measure PPP prime than under the measure PP, because under the measure PPP prime, it costs much less. It costs only P prime to open edges. What it costs P to open edges along the line under the measure PP. Okay, so this should measure how much better it is for the event and delta to occur under PPP prime than under PP. So it's kind of an energetic gain due to the reward that you get at along the line. But of course, your cluster certainly under PP, your cluster certainly does not want to follow the line, so there is an entropic cost to follow the line, and that's exactly what is measured by this second factor. Yeah. Okay. So what is this event m delta? So m delta will depend on a small parameter delta, And I will choose it. I want to choose m delta in such a way that I have these two properties. So I want the energetic gain to be bounded below by something that grows exponentially fast in n, actually exponentially fast in delta times n. Okay. And I want to bound from below the energetic, the entropic cost by something that decays to zero exponentially fast in delta squared times n in dimension 2 and in delta over log delta times n in dimension 3. Then I'm done. I'm done because in this case, as soon as I take delta small enough, energy beats entropy. Because delta is bigger than delta square, and delta is bigger than delta log delta, delta over log delta. Okay. So the point is to construct an event that has both these nice properties, and then you have automatically proved this result. Okay. So what is this event? This event m delta is the event that inside the cluster that connects 0 to any one, I can find a self-avoiding path that goes from 0 to any one, and that has at least delta n, so that's the delta in m delta, delta n cone points along the line. So like in this picture, so we have, these are cone points along the line, same definition of cone points as before, but for the path now, not for the cluster. It's just cone point of the path. I want the path to be contained into these diamonds that end at cone points. Okay. I want this property. And I want at least delta n such points along the line. Okay, so that's the event. First thing to do is the entropy estimate. So, remind you, the entropy estimate is the probability of seeing the event m delta occur when there is a connection. Okay, you want this kind of estimate on this. That's actually very easy to do. Because if you remember effective random walk representation introduced earlier, imagine that you look at your effective random walk, and each time the effective random walk steps on the line L, automatically it creates it creates a cone point for the cluster, but the cone point for the cluster has the property that any self-avoiding path contained in the cluster that has to go from 0 to any one has to go through this point. Okay? Because a cone point is a point, it's a point where everybody has to go through. Okay? So in particular, all the cone points of the effective random walk that lie on the line L are also cone points for any path, any self-avoiding path, like in this event. Okay? So I can estimate the probability of this occurring by just computing the probability that the effective random walk steps at least delta n times on the line on its way to any one. But that's easy, it's just a random walk estimate. Very easy to get an estimate of the correct order. Okay. Just an elementary random walk estimate. So this gives you immediately the estimate that I wrote here. What is more interesting is how you derive the energy bound. So energy bound, again, you want to compare the probability of m delta under PPP prime and under PP. You want something that grows exponentially with delta times n. Okay. So again, so m delta has been chosen to be an increasing event. Okay. The reason we have to deal with paths is instead of the cluster, it would be much more natural to say, okay, m delta is the event that the cluster has delta n cone points along the line. But this would not be an increasing event. It's very easy to show that it's not increasing. Okay. This is obviously an increasing event because I'm asking for a path of open bounds to exist with some properties. But of course, if it exists and I'm adding new bounds, it still exists, so it's obviously an increasing event. Okay. So that's why we have to deal with paths instead of the cluster itself. A bit of nuisance, but it's not very important. So it's an increasing event, so I can again use Rousseau formula to evaluate this ratio. This ratio is exactly the same kind of computation as before. You get that this is equal to the exponential of the integral from p to p prime, the derivative with respect to the second parameter, 1 over s, expectation under pp prime equal to s here, of the number of pivotal edges for m delta when m delta occurs. Okay? Same kind of computation we did earlier. And now, take a path m delta. One way to remove to make this event not to occur is just to cut the connection. If I remove the connection between 0 and any 1, then certainly there is no path that can connect 0 to any 1. So certainly the number of pivotal edges for m delta is bigger than the number of pivotal edges for the connection. So I can bound this. So the problem is reduced to showing that in average, I have of order delta n pivotal edges on the line for the connection. Okay. If I do that, I plug that inside here, and I will get something that grows exponentially fast with delta n, and I'm done. Okay. We want to show that. So here's the picture. That's our path with its cone point. This is at least delta n cone points along the line. Now, we say that the cone point is covered, like this one will be covered, because the backward cone that starts at this point, that goes there, and the forward cone that goes there, are connected outside the path. Okay, like here it's connected, this point is doubly covered. Okay, these two points are simultaneously covered by the same connection in the bulk and so on. Okay, here you have two points that are not covered, this one is not covered, this one is not covered. Okay. Now, since the bulk, the system is subcritical, and P prime can be taken very close to P, we know that to cover a point, we'll have a positive cost. So there will be a positive fraction of these cone points that will not be covered. Okay, that's not a completely trivial thing to show, but you can show it. That's a positive fraction of the cone points of the path are not covered. That means that I will have something that for the delta n of these cone points that are not covered. Okay, C delta n cone points that are not covered. Now take such an uncovered cone point, and you look at the two incident edges that you have on this cone point. Necessarily, they do lie on the line by construction. And moreover, they are pivotal. Suppose that I'm erasing this edge, I'm removing this edge. Then there cannot be a connection from 0 to anyone, because if there was a connection, it cannot use this edge because it's not there anymore, so it has to go using some other path, but then it would cover this point. It's forbidden to cover this point because it's uncovered. Okay. So necessarily, these two incident edges, they lie on the line, and they are pivotal for the connection. So that means that since I have O of delta n uncovered cone points, I also have O of delta n pivotal edges on the line. And this gives you the estimate you need to plug there and to get the desired behavior. So this proves that P prime C is indeed equal to P in dimension 2 and 3.
Yeah.
You use it, let's see, you use it, you see, in my the picture is not completely accurate, because it would be possible a priori to, let me think here, I don't remember if this is here, we really need it, but in principle, it might be possible for this path to use edges on the line, right? I don't remember if we force the path to lie outside these cones or not. What this path has to do is certainly they must not touch this green path, but they can do whatever they want to connect these two cones there. Okay. So you don't want, okay, you want to be sure that when you use edges on the line, you still pay enough so that it stays unlikely to connect the points. Okay. Probably we use it at this stage. I'm not even completely sure, but otherwise, I mean, the only thing you want is that P prime is larger than P. I don't remember if here we need that P prime is close to P or not. Okay. Now we'll have to look at the proof again. But at several places in the proof, when we use P prime is close to P, it's to make sure that the cost of making a connection is uniformly small wherever you do them, that you use passes along edges along the line or not. Okay. That's something that is certainly important. But then the result, of course, as soon as you know that this result is true for P prime close to P, you have it for any P prime by monotonicity. Okay, so that does not matter. Okay, so that's what we know. So psi P is constant up to some P prime C that is equal to P in dimension 2 and 3, that is bigger than P in dimension 4 and higher, and then it goes down to 1. So we don't know exactly how. So what can we say about the red part here? What more can we say about the red part? If you want to say more about the red part, you have to start looking at the cluster in more detail, to say something about the behavior of the cluster. So let me introduce the notion of cut point on the line. So this would be a cut point on the line for this blue cluster, because it's a point that belongs to the cluster and also to the line. Okay. And if I'm looking at the hyperplane that is orthogonal to the line and that contains this point, then it splits the cluster into two pieces, like in the picture. Okay. It cuts into a past and a future. Okay. That's a cut point along the line. And let me denote by this the number of cut points of the cluster along the line. Then the fact number 5 is that when P prime is larger than P prime critical, you can find rho and C positive, such that the probability that you have, that the density of cut points along the line is smaller than rho is exponentially small. So you will have a positive, with very large probability, exponentially close to 1, you will have a positive density of cut points along the line. Okay. The fact of this is, it's a bit long, but it's not very, it's a bit standard. You do it in 3 steps. First step, you do it for a self-folding path. You show that any self-folding path connecting 0 to anyone, made of open edges, of course, connecting 0 to anyone, leaves the line L only for small excursion, does not leave for too long the line L. Okay, that will be the first thing we show. Then you show that when you have such a path, conditionally in the presence of such a path, the rest of the cluster of zero connecting zero to anyone stays close to this path. Does not want to grow away from the path, conditionally on the presence of the path. And using these two facts, you can then use a surgery argument to ensure the presence of many cut points. So I want to sketch this. So that's the connection. That's one of these self-moving paths connecting zero to anyone made of open bonds. Okay. And what we will do is we'll make a coarse graining of this path. We'll construct a polygonal approximation to this path as follows. So you denote by U1 the last time the path is along the line before making a long excursion. What is a long excursion? It's an excursion that does not touch the line, that reaches a distance k from U1 without touching the line, like this blue piece here. Okay? And then you follow the path until you hit the line for the first time again after U1, so this is V1, and then you repeat the procedure, U2, V2, U3, V3. Between U1 and V1, you have the first excursion, X1, and this excursion you coarse grain it, so you make a polygonal approximation of this piece of the path at the scale k. Okay? K is some large fixed number, okay? Which depends on P and P prime. And you do that for each of these excursions. Okay? Then you get a polygonal approximation from 0 to U1, then you follow this polygonal line, and then from U1 to U2, and so on and so forth. Okay? And this broken line, this polygonal line that we get, is what we call the skeleton associated to the path. And what is the probability cost of the various pieces? So we have two types of pieces. You have connection between V1 and U2, say, or V2 and U3, which are along the line, and then you have this excursion between UJ and VJ. Okay. So for stretch along the line, I want an upper bound on the probability of seeing something like that. But an upper bound on this is obtained by looking at any connection from VJ to UJ plus 1 without any constraint, and this gives you exponential minus psi PP prime times UJ plus 1 minus VJ, okay, which is by definition of psi PP prime. What is the probability cost of an excursion which makes absolute value of xj steps of length k, all these steps, okay, away from the line? Then now you have to use the fact that p prime is larger than p prime critical, and since p prime is larger than p prime critical, I have that psi p is strictly larger than psi p p prime by definition of p prime critical. So psi p is larger than psi p p prime. Assume for a moment that psi p is isotropic to simplify the argument. Okay, so all these costs, for all these steps, I'm paying psi pp prime times k, say. Okay. Psi p times k, sorry, because these are connection the bulk. By definition, they don't touch the line. Okay. Now, I'm using this, so I can rewrite the cost of each of these segments, which is psi p times k. I can rewrite it like psi pp prime times k plus c times k for some positive c. Okay. Now, if I take all these psi pp prime that I get along there, being very pessimistic, I extract exponential minus psi pp prime vj minus uj. And then it remains this small additional cost, because psi p is larger than psi pp prime, this small additional cost I have for every step here, times the number of steps times the length of the steps. Okay, so I get something like that. Now, putting all this together, I can group all these psi pp prime, which gives me, again, being pessimistic, exponential minus psi pp prime times n. Okay, that will be the first part. And then you have something like minus ck times the total length of the excursion. Okay. That's good. That's the probability under PPP prime. Now I'm really interested in the probability under PPP prime conditionally on the fact that there is a connection. So I have to divide by the probability that there is a connection, but this behaves like exponential minus psi PP prime times n plus small of 1. Okay. But now we see that the leading order in n just disappears in the numerator and denominator, and what remains is something that is exponential of minus c times k times the total length of the total number of steps of the excursion plus small of n. So in particular, you see from here that if the total length of k times the total number of steps of the excursions is larger than epsilon times n, then this is exponentially decreasing in n. Okay. So basically, this should tell you that the probability that the total size of the excursion is at least epsilon n is exponentially unlikely. Of course, here I'm cheating a bit because you still have to take into account the entropy of all these skeletons, but this can be done. And what you get is indeed that the probability that you can find a path of open edges from 0 to anyone, which has such that the total length of the excursion is bigger than epsilon n, conditionally on the connection, is exponentially small. Okay. So what does this tell you? Now you take the line, you put a cube along the line of radius k, for example, and you look at all the pieces of the path which exit the cube, and you take their horizontal projection, okay, projection along the line. And you mark in dark blue all this bad region where the path exits the cube. Then by this result, the total length, fraction of the cube that is covered by this bad region is negligible. It's smaller than epsilon, if you fix on epsilon. Okay? It's very small. Most of the cube is light blue. Now you can make exactly the same kind of argument. I will not detail that. Similar coordinating argument to show that the same result that we have for the path here is also true for the cluster itself. So by adding all the branches that start from the path, you get something like this. You look at, so you increase slightly the width of the tube, say by factor 2, and then you look at everything that goes outside the tube, and you take the horizontal projection, and this will cover only a tiny fraction of the tube. Okay. Then the picture will be like that. So that's a piece of the tube. There sometimes you have some bad regions, like here and there, but in between you have long stretches of good regions, which is light blue. And then what occurs? So you take just one of these things and let's zoom. So what we see is something like that. We know that there is a connection from zero, which is somewhere on the left, to anyone, which is somewhere on the right. And here the cluster has to stay inside the tube and to cross. So we have some cluster crossing inside the tube in this region here. Okay. And now we make some surgery inside this yellow box. Make some surgery, and the surgery is this one. So all these, I hope you see that. All these are dotted edges. All these dotted edges I remove. Okay, I close. All these bold edges here, so this edge here in dimension 2, I force open. Okay, this is finite cost because this finite box, I'm touching a finite number of edges. So I'm opening these guys, closing all these guys in between. This has a finite probabilistic cost. What happens when I do that? Certainly, I've not broken the connection. My connection that was arriving here, it can cross here and then it continues on its way there. Okay, so I still have a connection. So that's good. And I've created here a cut point, because here inside by construction, the hyperplane going through this point does not meet anybody else. And outside cannot meet anybody from the cluster. If intersected some branches from the cluster, that would mean that this guy is covered by a branch, then it would be dark blue, not light blue. And that would contradict the construction. Okay, so I've created in this way, with positive probability, I've created a cut point. Since this can occur with positive probability independently in each of these boxes, and I have of order n such boxes, that means I will have of order n cut points with probability close to 1, exponentially close to 1. Okay, so that's the proof. So what can you deduce from this? You can deduce that fact number 6. You can deduce two things. Immediately, one is that psi p prime is strictly decreasing, not only decreasing, this part, when p prime is larger than p prime critical here. It's not only decreasing, strictly decreasing, it's also real analytic. So the only singularity you have for the function psi p prime is exactly at p prime c. It's constant before, it's analytic afterward. Okay, so again, we use Rousseau's formula. So look at the probability that there is a connection between 0 and any 1, take the log, compute derivatives with respect to p prime. Then this gives you, as we've done many times now, the expectation and the conditional measure of the number of pivotal edges. Okay. Now, we are assuming that p prime is larger than p prime critical, and we've seen that in this case, you have many cone points. You have a positive density, you have rho n cone points along the line. Okay, that's what we have. Cut points, sorry, along the line. What's this claim? That's this claim here. Positive density of this guy. And each time you have such a guy, the incident edges are necessarily pivotal for the same reason I explained before. We deduce immediately that the expected number of pivotal edges when p prime is larger than p prime c grows like at least, say, rho over 2 times n. So consequently, psi pp prime 2 minus psi pp prime 1 is given, okay, by replace these two by the definitions, the limit of this thing. Okay. Now, I have a difference between two guys that look like that, so I can write this as the integral of the derivative. We have an estimate for the derivative. This gives you immediately that this is smaller than minus rho over 2 p prime 2 minus p prime 1, which shows that this is strictly decreasing. Okay. For the analyticity, it would take a bit more time, so I have no time to do it here, but if there is a question at the end, I can try to explain it. It follows from the renewal structure that you have you have a natural annual structure for the connection probability that comes from the presence of all these cut points. Okay, there is a renewal each time you have a cut point, you have a renewal of the process. And this implies rather easily the real analyticity of Xi-PP prime. So what can we say, last thing I want to say, what can we say about the way this curve meets, behaves, say, when P gets close, P prime gets close to P prime critical? This, unfortunately, we can only say in dimension 2 and 3. Okay, so in dimension 2 and 3, we know that when P prime goes down to P prime critical, Xi P minus Xi P P prime behaves quadratically in dimension 2. It behaves like exponential minus 1 over P prime minus P prime C in dimension 3. We don't know how it behaves in dimension 4 and higher. Okay. And this actually, this follows immediately from the way we proved the fact that P prime was equal to P, that P prime critical was equal to P in dimension 2 and 3. You just have to take care of the dependence in P prime of all the constants that you get, and if you take care of everything, you see that this follows. Okay. Okay. So last fact is, it's not something directly about Xi-PP prime, something rather about the behavior of the connectivity. It says that in dimension 2 and higher, for any P prime larger than P prime critical, you can find a constant that depends on D, on P and P prime, such that the probability that 0 is connected to any 1, so we know that it behaves roughly that like exponential minus Xi-PP prime n, but then actually it's equal to this times a constant and 1 plus small of 1. Okay? And this has to be contrasted with what happens when P prime is equal to P, in which case, it's known, this in this particular geometry, it was already known in paper by company who Chase, that this probability behaves like exponential minus psi pn, and you have a prefactor that is algebraic in A. It's 1 over n to the power d minus 1 over 2. This is this Einstein-Zernike behavior. So there is a different behavior that comes from the fact that here the cluster is behaving in a diffusive way. It behaves like a random walk, like a Brownian motion, it has Brownian scaling in the limit. While in this case, it's lying along the line. As we've seen, it's basically touching the line all the time. Okay, so it's a very different behavior. Okay, the proof, again, relies on the renewal structure of the cluster. It's a rather easy way, again. Okay, so to conclude, last few minutes, I want to mention several open problems around this topic. The first concern, the properties of Xi-PP prime. So as I told you, we don't know what is the critical behavior of Xi P prime as P prime goes down to P prime critical dimension 4 and higher. We don't know how to do that. And the second thing is we have always looked at this as a function of P prime for P fixed. But actually it's really a function of P and P prime. So it would be quite natural to look at it as a function of both variables and to understand how it behaves, in particular close to the critical line P goes to P prime critical of P. Okay? As a function of both parameters. This is probably doable, we have not done it. And another type of question is more general defect. So we took, for simplicity, defect line that is along a coordinate axis, simplified notation and so on, but you could consider defect line different directions, or you could consider higher dimensional type of defect. This, I think, this would be doable also. Okay, with the same kind of ideas, you have to do it. More difficult it would be to look at what occurs when you put your defect line or defect hyperplane, whatever, at the boundary of the system, not in the bulk, inside the bulk, but at the boundary of the system. You look at half space percolation, say half plane percolation dimension 2 with a line of defect on the boundary of the plane. Then this is probably much harder to do. And but this would be quite relevant for as a toy model for wetting type transitions. Then another thing that would be nice is to study sharp asymptotics of the connectivity function. This we know how to do when P prime is larger than P prime critical. These are these pure exponential decay that I've just indicated. We also know how this behaves when P prime is equal to P. We have this Einstein-Zernike behavior, but it's not clear how to prove this in general for any P prime smaller or equal to P prime C. Okay? And at the same time, if you can do that, then at the same time, you will be also able to prove what is the scaling limit of the cluster in this regime. Okay. And finally, it would be nice to extend this to other models. In particular, it would be nice to have a version for escape. This is probably doable, a version for escape percolation, because this would imply the same result I've sketched in this talk, would also be true for Ising and POTS models, which would be very nice because this is completely open for these models, except for partial results for the two-dimensional Ising model, which you can get by exact computations. You can compute the equivalent of Psi PP prime for the two-dimensional Ising model. You can get some information from that. Okay, so thank you very much for your attention.